present this paper for us relating to IFRS 10, so it will be relevant to our post-implementation review that we have begun. So we will hear from Martin, 30 minutes, we'll take a short break for coffee, and then we'll come back and have the two discussions. So, thank you, Martin.
Thank you, Anne. Firstly, thanks to the organisers and for inviting me to present this paper. My name is Martin Bajet, I'm from the University of Technology in Sydney. This paper is co-authored with two colleagues at the University of Technology, as well as Anna Leung and Nelson Marr. Now, thank you for all hanging around till the last afternoon. I seem to have a fairly bad track record. Whenever I get to present at a conference, I always seem to be scheduled in the very last session. So, but hopefully all the good comments wait to the very end. Okay, so what we do in this paper, and having another read of the paper this morning at 2 a.m. with my jet lag, the paper seems fairly simple, because what we're going to do is we look at the implementation of IFRS 10. Now, I'll give you a bit of a quick overview of IFRS 10 on the next slide, because I'm not sure how many people are aware of what IFRS 10 involved. But what we do is we look at the impact of IFRS 10 using Australian data on consolidated financial reporting. Now, to be a bit more specific, what we actually do is we look at the number of subsidiaries, so we actually go through and we count the number of subsidiaries that get consolidated. We look at the consolidation of non-majority owned subsidiaries. We also try to look at the consolidation of loss-making subsidiaries, because given the current disclosures that we get in the financial reports, we can't test that directly. And I'll talk more about that a little bit later. And the last thing that we do, as well, is we look at whether the adoption of IFRS 10 impact the value relevance to the financial statements. And we also analyse if the change in the number of subsidiaries and the consolidation of non-majority owned subsidiaries is related to what we term financial reporting incentives. And now we include Big Four auditors in there, so it's not really a financial reporting incentive, but we'll just bundle them together as we're going through the presentation. Okay, so a little bit of a background on consolidation. I imagine most of you, being accountants, know how consolidation operates. Deciding which entities get consolidated into the financial reports depends on working through the definition of control. And as I'll mention a little bit more in detail in a few minutes' time, one of the criticisms, or there were a couple of main criticisms of the prior definition of control in IAS 27, which arguably allowed entities to discretion, if you want to look at it that way, discretion to either include or exclude certain of their investees. Now, in 2013, at least in Australia from 2013, because I know Europe was 1 year behind, from 2013, Australian firms had to adopt IFRS 10, which implemented a new definition of control. Now, reading through the IASB's effect analysis, what they hoped was that the new control definition would reduce, in their words, the divergence of practice and increase the level of consistency that firms had when they actually implemented the definition of control. Now, the main motivation for doing this study, and I began jumping on that a moment ago, is our findings, hopefully, when we look through any prior evidence, we couldn't find any. So maybe someone has published a paper in the last few months, but we couldn't find any prior evidence that looked at the impact of IFRS 10. So hopefully, by providing some evidence, we can feed that into the IASB's post-implementation review, and it should give some detail on whether there was an impact on the number of subsidiaries that were consolidated. Also give some information on whether it impacted on the usefulness of the financial statements after the introduction of the standard. Now, normally when I present a new paper, I normally like to go through some of the key results early, so that way if people late in the afternoon start to doze off and maybe not focus on the tables later on in the slides, they still get a feeling of what the results are. To try and summarise the results, we find that the adoption of IFRS 10 seems to result in the consolidation of less subsidiaries. Now, I need to qualify my statement there. Yes, we find a statistically significant decrease in the number of subsidiaries, but if you look at the economic effect, it's fairly small. Okay, so it doesn't seem to be much of a material impact of the adoption of IFRS 10. When we do some extra analysis, the impact of IFRS 10 seems to be impacted by what we call financial reporting incentives, so things like leverage, whether firms are making a loss, and also the type of audit firm that they're using. if we look at the consolidation of non-majority owned subsidiaries, there seems to be a decrease in the likelihood that firms consolidate non-majority owned subsidiaries. Again, that also seems to be related to leverage and whether firms are loss-making. We then try to analyse whether there's an impact on firms, consolidating firms that are making a loss. As I mentioned a moment ago, we can't design a direct test for that, but we do seem to find that when firms have a decrease in subsidiaries, then that decrease seems to be associated with a decrease in profit. And I'll go through that test in a few minutes' time. The value relevance tests tend to show that the value relevance of net income and equity doesn't change after the adoption of IFRS 10. When we break our sample down up into firms that had a decrease, increase, or no change in subsidiaries, we do find that there's a significant decrease only for firms that have a decrease in their number of subsidiaries. There seems to be a decrease in the value relevance of equity. Okay, so now to go through some of the background on consolidation, firstly in Australia, because I imagine maybe other than Anne, most people don't have much of a feel for consolidation reporting in Australia. If you go back to the early 1990s, we didn't actually have any legally enforceable accounting standards in Australia. So prior to then, we had the corporations legislation, which required companies to consolidate subsidiaries when they had majority ownership. Now, it actually stated that you only had to consolidate companies. Now, you can imagine that led to a bit of fun and games where entities would interpose a trust in their group structure, so they didn't have to consolidate anything underneath the trust. Now, the first accounting standard that we had was AASB 1024, which was applicable from 1991. Now, you notice there that our first definition of control was a principles-based definition of control. That was in our first accounting standard. And that applied until Australia adopted International Financial Reporting Standards in 2005. Okay, so in 2005, Australian firms adopted IAS 27. Now, this is where we get to some of the criticisms around the definition of control in IAS 27. The two main areas of criticism around the definition of control was firstly the use of the terminology, the power to govern the financial and operating policies of the investee, because that arguably allowed firms to state that you can only have the power to govern if you had majority ownership. So if you didn't have majority ownership, then you could say we don't have to consolidate the investee. The second part of the control definition that arguably gave firms the ability to either exclude or, I guess, include certain entities was the argument that you had to obtain benefits from the activities of the investee. That possibly allowed the investor to argue that if firms were loss-making, then if you the other organisation's loss-making, you're not obtaining benefits, so in that case, you don't need to consolidate the investee. Now, we do have statements like that from Ernst & Young, that potentially was a contributing factor to the GFC. Now, I'm not going to enter into that debate. Now, to address the criticisms in the definition in IAS 27, IFRS 10 was introduced. Now, IFRS 10 had a new principles-based definition of control. Now, I'll point out some of the changes in the definition of control. Firstly, the change was around whether you obtain benefits. So rather than stating you obtain benefits, IFRS 10 says you have control when the investor is exposed to rights to variable returns. Now, just note, the standard then goes on to say variable returns can be positive, can be negative, or both positive and negative. So it's trying to make it fairly clear that even if you have a loss-making entity, that the entity still needs to be consolidated. The other change is around the power to govern, where rather than using the terminology the power to govern, the new definition of control says the ability to affect returns through the power over the investee. The standard then gives a lot of application guidelines, guidance to preparers to assist them to highlight that even if you don't have majority ownership, then you can still have sufficient power when your ownership is less than 50%. So the new standard's trying to get at the problem of loss-making entities not being consolidated as well as entities not being consolidated where there's not majority ownership. Now, a little bit about prior research. As I highlighted a few minutes ago, As far as I can tell at the moment, there doesn't seem to be any prior research looking at the effects of IFRS 10. So if you go back and look at some of the research that has looked at the consolidation generally of subsidiaries over the last 20 or 30 years, you can kind of divide those into two streams. The first stream looks at whether firms are likely to consolidate, or more likely to consolidate if you have a rules-based definition of control or a principles-based definition of control. For example, I mentioned a moment ago the Australian corporations legislation based the control definition around ownership back in the early 1990s, and there was a whole lot of transaction structuring around the 50% threshold. More recent research looks at by Beck. More recent research looks at whether firms continue to structure their ownership below 50%, both in the US and with IFRS adoption of IAS 127. And what they found surprisingly was that firms seem to continue to structure their ownership below 50% even after the adoption of the new accounting standards. The other stream of research, and again you have to go way back to find this stream of research, is more looking at the voluntary consolidation of subsidiaries, as well as why firms would lobby against or for voluntary consolidation or standards for consolidation. One of the arguments that comes through quite clearly there is the removal of debt. That's one of the arguments for non-consolidation, is that you'd want to avoid bringing the debt of the investee onto your balance sheet, and that gives you an incentive not to consolidate. There is one early Australian study which was conducted by Greg Richard. Now, Greg has actually a surprising result where Greg finds that voluntary consolidation in Australia is actually higher where you have higher leverage, which is kind of the flip of what some of the other studies find. There's no explanation given for that. If I had to kind of guess, it's probably because of the different type of contracting in Australia where there's less public debt and there's more private debt, which potentially explains that result. Okay, so to run through the hypotheses that we tested in this paper, and we had a few of them. Now, the general theme that runs through the hypotheses that we have in the study, and going back when we were putting the paper together, I did sit down with my two co-authors, and we weren't, number one, certain whether we should actually include hypotheses in the study because it's a fairly descriptive piece. The second discussion we had was whether we should actually state the hypotheses in the directional form or whether we should state the hypotheses without a direction. There's no clear-cut way that we expect the accounting standard to impact on the financial statements. If you look at the ISB effects analysis, they express uncertainty as whether the standard's going to result in more subsidiaries being consolidated or less subsidiaries being consolidated. Also, as well, you have the possibility that firms are going to restructure their organisation to avoid consolidation. So we state our first hypothesis simply saying we expect there to be association. We don't know if this number of subsidiaries is going to go up or down. We simply say that we expect that there's going to be a change in the number of subsidiaries consolidated after the adoption of the standard. We then make a couple of hypotheses around the two changes in the control definition. Firstly, around whether we expect there to be the consolidation of firms with non-majority ownership and the consolidation of firms that are loss-making. Again, if you believe the arguments against the previous control definition, you'd expect there to be an increase in the consolidation of these types of firms. Alternatively, firms might restructure, which is what prior evidence shows, or using the revised principles-based definition of control, they might try and play around with the words again, which might actually allow them to not consolidate. So we expect there to be a change, but we don't put a direction on either the consolidation of non-majority-owned subsidiaries or loss-making subsidiaries. Our fourth hypothesis around what we call financial reporting incentives. Given the prior research that shows that leverage likely impacts the consolidation of subsidiaries, that firm profitability, auditor type, and CEO ownership impacts the consolidation of subsidiaries, what we argue here is that perhaps some firms were already appropriately, or were doing the right thing. So if some firms are already doing the right thing, they're less likely to be impacted by the new accounting standard. So we expect the effect of the adoption of IFRS 10 to depend on some of the factors which we refer to as financial reporting incentives. The last thing that we test is the value relevance of the financial statements. The ASB expects or hopes that the new standard is going to provide more useful financial statements and financial statements that are more comparable. This suggests that financial statements should hopefully be or potentially be more value relevant. Previous research in Taiwan suggests that the move to a principles-based definition of control increased the value relevance of financial statements. However, given some of the points I've already mentioned, that maybe the restructuring or maybe the also offering increased discretion or continuing to offer discretion allows firms to perhaps manipulate the definition, so we don't actually know what's going to happen. So we take this hypothesis in enough form where we don't expect there to be an association between value relevance and the adoption of RIPPLE standard. Okay, so going on to what we find in some of our sample. Our sample was constructed from the ASX top 500 firms. We keep the sample to the top 500 firms for a few reasons. One, to reduce the data collection. Number two, if you know the Australian Stock Exchange, once you get beyond the top 500 in Australia, you're getting into fairly small firms, which are probably less likely to have subsidiaries anyway. Now, once we go through and exclude firms for reasons typically involving data collection problems, what we end up with is about a sample of 1,000, 1,100 firm years. Now, just note, we have excluded firms that early adopted IFRS 10. That's firm years. There's only 8 firm years with an early adoption. And we also have excluded firms using US GAAP. Okay, so the way that we get the data, and I must thank UTS for providing us with funding to do this, we actually download the annual reports, and we had a research assistant manually collect the data. Okay, so this is the disclosure for Wesfarmers, which is a large Australian listed conglomerate. This is all we have to work with. Okay, so you can see all that we have is the name of the subsidiary plus the ownership interest. We don't get anything else. Now, I can digress for a second. I can actually go back 23 years. This is Wesfarmers from 23 years ago under the previous accounting standards. I'm afraid we have a plug here. You can see we used to get the contribution to profit of the consolidated entity. So if we can get that now, we could have conducted our loss-making test, but we no longer get that information, so we couldn't do that with the adoption of IFRS 10. Okay, so just a little bit on our descriptive statistics. I won't go through all of this, obviously. If we focus just on the first line here, which is our mean and median subsidiaries, you can see that pre-IFRS 10 mean subsidiary is about 33. It goes down by about 1.4 on average. So there's a downward effect, but it's not very big. And you can also see that the median doesn't change. Okay, so the median before and after the adoption of IFRS 10 is 16 subsidiaries. Okay, so not much of an effect there. If you look at the consolidation of non-majority subsidiaries, you can see as well there's a decrease. Those of you that are looking at the last row, you can see it's not statistically significant. Okay, so the way we first test our first hypothesis is to run a regression where we're looking at the count of the number of subsidiaries. I'm not going to go through all the control variables other than to say we're going to focus on whether there's a change post the adoption of IFRS 10. If we look at the results, we find that there's a decrease, marginally significant, if you want to label it that way, a marginally significant decrease in the number of subsidiaries after the adoption of IFRS 10. We then conduct some change models, firstly for the full sample. You can see we find a consistent result using a change model when we've got the whole sample. We then partition the sample into whether the number of subsidiaries went up, down, or no change. And we only find a significant result on the sample where we have a downward change in the number of subsidiaries. Okay, the second regression is looking at the likelihood. This is the likelihood that a firm consolidates a subsidiary with non-majority ownership. Again, we're going to focus on the post variable. What we find here is a significant negative result. So it seems that after the adoption of IFRS 10, that there's a decreased likelihood that firms consolidate subsidiaries with non-majority ownerships. Now, I'll get some of the additional tests later on, but I probably should mention here that if we redefine the variable here using the proportion of subsidiaries with non-majority ownership, there is no significant results. Okay, so we find significant results using a likelihood, but not if we use the proportion of subsidiaries that have non-majority ownership. Okay, the test of H3, and remember, hypothesis 3 is looking at the likelihood that you consolidate subsidiaries that are loss-making. Now, this is where we actually had a discussion in the book about dropping this hypothesis from the paper because we don't have data on firms' profitability, the subsidiaries' profitability. So this is the test that we came up with. It's probably not a perfect test. If anyone has any other suggestions, we're more than happy to take them on board. So what we do is we analyse if your return on assets is associated with whether there's an upward or downward change in subsidiaries, and we then look if that association is different after the adoption of IFRS 10. Okay, so that's the best test that we could come up with in terms of trying to test the impact of loss-making subsidiaries. And what we find here is that an upward change in subsidiaries is insignificant. Downward change in subsidiaries leads to a decrease in profitability. So it seems to suggest you're selling profitable subsidiaries because your ROA goes down. However, we find a positive coefficient on the interaction term. So that seems to suggest that the effect is reduced after the adoption of IFRS 10. Okay, so that's the best we can do with the data that we have to test hypothesis 3. Okay, hypothesis 4, looking at the impact of incentives. Now, the incentives that we focus on are leverage, a Big Four auditor, not really an incentive, but we test whether there's a different effect of a Big Four auditor, CEO ownership, and whether the firm is making a loss. Now, we run that test for both the count regression, so whether there's a change in the number of subsidiaries, as well as the change in the likelihood of consolidating non-majority owned subsidiaries. But what we find with the count regression is significant results on leverage, Big Four, and CEO ownership, which seem to suggest that those variables or those factors lessen the effect of the adoption of IFRS 10. So those firms were less impacted by the adoption of the new standard. When we look at the effect on the consolidation of non-majority owned subsidiaries, what we find there is that firms with high leverage and firms that are loss-making are less likely to consolidate non-majority owned subsidiaries after the adoption of IFRS 10. Because there seems to be a differential effect impacted by the different incentives that we study in the study. Okay, the final test is a value relevance test, and I think the paper we saw this morning had a value relevance test in there as well. We firstly run the base case regression, where we're looking at the value relevance, the book value of equity and profit. We then interact those factors with our post variable. Now you can see here in column 2 that the results are insignificant, so there doesn't seem to be any change in the value relevance of the financial statements. We then partition that into the up, down, and no change samples, so just breaking it out by whether the number of subsidiaries is going up or down. And we do find a result, and the result there is on the downward change sample where there seems to be a decrease in the value relevance of equity in the downward sample in column 4. Okay, so overall, there doesn't seem to be much evidence suggesting that the value relevance of the financial statements was impacted by the adoption of IFRS 10. Okay, so you just mentioned some of the additional tests that we did. We removed some of the December year-end firms. I think Tom emailed me over the last week talking about some of the December year-end firms. So this isn't in the paper, so we thought, well, what would happen if we remove the December year-end firms? The results are robust, so there's no change in any of the results. We control for CEO turnover, doesn't make any difference. Something that I'd like to mention, which is fairly interesting, is we looked at all the significant accounting policies, or in Australia, typically Note 1, for the year of transition. I actually did that myself, so I read through all of the Note 1s to see what the companies said. And of all the companies that we read through, there was only two that said the accounting standard had a material effect. And so even though there was subsidiaries going up or down, only two actually disclosed the material effect of the adoption of IFRS 10. We've taken out the firms that have no subsidiaries, the results don't change. I mentioned the alternative definition of majority ownership. We've also conducted the value relevance tests using separately assets and liabilities, and the results are consistent with those that we reported a few moments ago. Okay, so to try and conclude, I guess what we find is evidence of a small decrease in subsidiaries. One way of looking at that is that there wasn't much of an impact on the adoption of IFRS 10. Whether that generalises to other settings, I guess that can be investigated in other research. I tried to highlight that Australia's had a principles-based definition of control back through 1990. Okay, so maybe, I don't know if that impacts, whether we expect that to affect, if there's going to be much of an impact of adopting a new principles definition of control. Now, just to finish up, some of the limitations of the study. Number one, we've only done the top 500 firms. Whether we would get a different result if we went further down, I'm not sure. But if we did go further down, and there's about 1,700 firms on the ASX, we would be going into some very small listed firms if we kept going down. Another important limitation of the study is the same time that IFRS 10 was adopted, IFRS 11 and IFRS 12 were also adopted in Australia as well. So there might be an impact of the adoption of the other standards at the same time, which is impacting our results that we haven't taken into account in our study. Anyway, I've probably started to run out of time, so thank you. And I'll get you good afternoon again.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin.